and welcome into the brand new Who's On podcast, part of the Sabre Podcast Network. I am your host, Preston Willett, writer for thesabre.com. Thanks for joining us on this maiden voyage of the Who's On podcast. Just a quick breakdown what you can expect here. I've covered Virginia for the last 8 years, been around the program for a lot longer than that, going back to my childhood, and I'll be running point alongside a rotating cast of guests each week from beat writers, athletes, coaches, alumni, folks on the national level and around the ACC, giving you a different angle on the Wahoos. Podcasts typically will aim to air on twice a week on Mondays and Thursdays, coming to you on a Tuesday this week throughout the football season. Might adjust, you know, here and now as we go from Scott Stadium over to JPJ to the Dish and a lot more along the way. You can find the Who's On podcast anywhere you find your podcasts, on Apple and Spotify, as well as on thesabre.com, where you can check out our latest stories, features, analysis, and of course, the message board. But that's just the topping. Let's get into the meat of this show now. Joining the Who's On podcast for this inaugural show, a couple of my good friends from the beat, and if you pay attention to UVA, you probably already know them. Greg Medea from the Daily Progress and Jackie Franchulli from 247 Sports. Greg, Jackie, football season finally arrived this past weekend. We got to see some football, and now this week we'll get to see Virginia play some football. Greg, how are you feeling about just getting past the dog days of fall camp now?
Yeah, excited to see some games. Richmond coming to town, which should make for a game Virginia needs to put the foot down a little bit. I know we've all spoken about it before, and it's an opportunity for Virginia to start the right way. So excited to see what happens on Saturday.
Yeah, I was going to say talking season is over. So it's nice to actually get to talk on the field for once and just see where this Virginia team is right now after, you know, we've seen so many progress and hopeful signs last year, but they couldn't get over those humps in the close game situation. Now they have the experience. They have some veterans back. So it's good to see and kind of grade out that first game and then kind of see where this team is headed.
All right. Well, we're going to have our dessert first. We're going to get right into season predictions, and we're going to start with that by looking at this schedule. We've talked about this, you know, just over, you know, during practices and whatnot. What are some key games on the schedule? Jackie, we'll go to you first. What is your key game that you're looking at when you look at this schedule for UVA?
Well, obviously, Virginia has to start quickly. The first five games are going to be crucial for them. They need to win at least four of those five games. I would say like winning five games can nudge them to a bowl game situation, even though the second half of the season is quite daunting. I point to that Wake Forest game at Wake Forest. You expect them to win against Richmond. So if you can get two games in a row, you're going to that game against Maryland with some momentum. If you can carry that momentum all the way to that first bye week, that'll be crucial for Virginia because they're favored. If you look at the ESPN FPI index, they're favored against two teams in that first five games. So you have Richmond and Coastal Carolina. So if they can get ahead in those games and then make it into winning five games, then they can secure a bowl game. So that's why I think Wake Forest is just a game that can continue that momentum. And that's what this team needs.
Yeah, I'll jump in real quick, Greg, just because I agree with Jackie on that, the Wake Forest game. And I know, you know, Wake has not been, you know, what they were, you know, in years prior, but, you know, Dave Clawson runs a good program. You know, they're going to be a well-coached team. You know, maybe they don't have the players that they used to, but yeah, that first five game stretch for Virginia, you know, starting with Richmond going all the way through the Boston College game, it's so crucial for them. It's kind of like Syracuse's schedules in the past where, you know, they had some easier games in the front. If they can get out to a good start, you know, then maybe, you know, they don't have to do as much work on the back end just to get into a bowl game. And that's kind of the goal this year for Virginia, is just to get into a bowl game, show some progress. And so I'm going to highlight that Wake Forest game. It's the first ACC game. It's a night game on the road. You know, traditionally some tough spots from UVA in those types of games, and traditionally tough spots against Wake Forest in the past too. But I mean, they haven't played each other a lot, but you know, they haven't won there in a while. So just, I'm going to highlight that Wake Forest game. Greg, I bet you'll take probably more of a bigger picture look, but what is one of the key games for you?
Yeah, Preston, I'm not one of those people who believe the season comes down to one game. I can't get behind them that when there's 11 other opportunities. So for me, I think it's that stretch of games that you guys kind of touched on. It's a real three game stretch in that season. It's at Wake, home against Maryland, at Coastal Carolina. To me, if you go 2-3 in that spot, or you go 3-0 in that spot, it can propel your season forward. if you flounder and you are beaten up a little bit in that stretch, and you're, 2-2 or 1-3 by the end of that stretch overall, it's tough, right? That the rest of that schedule looks really daunting if that's the case. So for me, I look at it as a 3-game stretch. Wake Forest game that you guys kind of point to as the all important game is certainly part of that. I think it's that 3-game stretch. Because they're all winnable games, right? Maryland, the team UVA took down to the fourth quarter last year. It got away when Anthony Calandria threw a couple of picks in a row. But besides that, those are all games Virginia should look at as winnable and needing to win.
Yeah, and it looks like Calandria might get a chance for revenge against Maryland. We'll talk about a little bit more about him coming up. But how about this in the schedule? Best chance for an upset. We saw it last year with Virginia a couple times against UNC on the road. Obviously, that was the big one. That was the one you throw in the DVD at the end of the season. Everyone looks back and thinks fondly of, maybe not a lot of fond moments to think back about last season. Duke, another one where they got a good win on at home. Obviously, that Duke team kind of faded towards the end with some injuries, but still, it was a big win. So, best chance for an upset, Greg.
SMU. I'll say it. I know a lot of national folks are high on the ponies. They played this past weekend, week zero, and it was a struggle for three quarters until they finally started throwing the ball to RJ Maryland over and over again.
Who
He's
would
a
have
matchup
thought?
nightmare. Terrific player. Terrific player. But I just wonder about the depth. When you're making that move from a group of five to a power four league, I wonder about the depth and how that's going to hold up and sustain throughout the course of the year. And they may have a nice run in September. I'm not saying they can't flip the switch and figure it out a little bit after a lackluster week zero performance. But to me, I look as that season goes along. I saw it when I was at school covering West Virginia as a student, and they went from the Big East to the Big 12. There's often a difference, particularly up front. And I know Rhett Lashley added, I think, 13 of their 20 transfers, offensive and defensive linemen. You just wonder how it all comes together and if it can hold up throughout the duration of a season at this level. They've got a tough stretch, right? I think it's like they got Florida State and Louisville in back-to-back weeks. It's difficult for the Mustangs starting out a new league.
Yeah, you mentioned that tough stretch. BYU, TCU, Florida State, all at home, but still some tough teams. Then you go on the road to Louisville, on the road to Stanford, and then on the road to Duke. So a lot of travel, a lot of tough teams on that schedule. And then, what you were saying earlier against Nevada, that was a 2-10 team last year in Nevada. So some early struggles, not the promising side that you liked from this SMU team that returns a lot of talent. Jackie, where are you going for your best upset watch?
I was going to originally pick North Carolina because anytime UNC and Virginia play, you can sense a possibility of an upset. It's just the history between these two teams. And UNC is traveling to Charlottesville. And I think UNC's roster isn't as talented as a team that Virginia played last year at Chapel Hill. So I still think that's an upset watch for Virginia. But I kind of agree with Greg on SMU as well because of what we saw during week zero. If you asked me on Friday, although I wasn't too high on SMU, I thought they were going to be okay in the ACC. Seeing how they play and then seeing, the tough stretch, and then when Virginia plays SMU is going to be the key here towards the second half of the season, almost the end of the season, where Greg says the depth concerns will be there. So I can see the SMU is more likely of an upset. Although, again, asterisks, I think UNC is also a potential upset bid for Virginia.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with UNC. I like the SMU game, and obviously seeing what we saw on Saturday for them in their opener didn't leave a lot of good positive signs rolling for SMU as they had maybe going into the year. UNC, though, there's been a lot of weird hype lately for Max Johnson, their quarterback. And I know, Mac Brown has said he doesn't know who the quarterback's going to be, but a couple ACC people I've seen have started talking about Max Johnson. I don't know. We've watched this guy play a lot of college football, and I haven't really seen it yet. So, I mean, I know UNC has had some good quarterbacks as of late, Drake May, Sam Howell, but I'm not sure Max Johnson is following in that line. So I'm gonna stick with the upset watch there. All right. Overall season predictions now. The Vegas total line is at 4.5. I've seen some people on the low side of that. I've seen some people taking the over. Jackie, what are you taking?
I would pick the over because I'm kind of between 5 to 7 games for Virginia. There's a path to a bowl game, kind of like what I said earlier. If they win 4 of the 5 first games, you can see them picking out 1 or 2 games in the second half. So 6 games, you would guarantee it. But you also can see them winning 7 because you can see them winning 5 out of 5 and then moving on and most securing 1 or 2 games at the end. So again, for me, the question for Virginia is they worked on getting experience depth and having good quality depth. So will that depth be there when it comes to the second half of the season? The one good thing that I like about Virginia's schedules, it's broken down into thirds. You have a bye week every month. So it's good for a team to recover that way. I mean, they have, you know, at Coastal Carolina, and then there's a break. Then you face North Carolina, and then there's a break where you have your probably your most challenging section. When you have 3 road games and 4, you have a break right before it. So that's when you see it outlined like that, you can see possibilities for this team. Again, it really is about that opening stretch, but there is a possibility for them to reach that bowl game.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with 6 wins as well. I like you said, that key stretch at the beginning of the season, if they can win 4 of those games, if they can go 5 of those games, you know, maybe they get to more than 6 wins. But I'm going to stick with 6 wins because I think in the back half of the schedule, there are opportunities. Mentioned UNC, mentioned SMU. I also like that at Pitt game. I know it's on the road in Pittsburgh, but I'm not that high on the Panthers this year. So I like their chances at getting at 6 wins and getting into a bowl game with this team a little more than maybe the consensus nationally is. Greg, are you on the same page?
I think they go over. I think they're in that 5-6 win range. It wouldn't shock me to see them at 5. It wouldn't shock me to see them at 6. Just because I think that's kind of the team they are. It would surprise me to see them at 7. It would definitely surprise me to see them at 7. But I think there's a path to 6. But I'll probably at this point go 5. You need to see the proof. This team hasn't done it back to back years. I think they'll be better. I think they're an older, more veteran team, which typically bodes well. You want to see, are they improved though? Right? Can they make plays in close games to flip? They had 5 losses by a touchdown or less last year. Can they do the little things? Can they make the corrections? Are the special teams a massive problem? Is the offensive line an issue? Are some of the same problems that Virginia's had continuing to happen and occur in Tony Elliott's third season? If they're fixed, this team could get to 6 and get to a bowl game. If not, it'll be 5. And that's kind of where I'm at. Improved, but not a massive step.
I think should we just start like a clock, like the old clock for Virginia Tech? Should we just the path to 6 and just add 1 to the board every week? I think that would probably garner a lot of interest on social media, probably not in the positive, but let's go ahead. We'll take our first break. When we get back, we're going to go straight into the offense. And yes, the big decision has finally come for quarterback Anthony Calandra, named the starter. We'll also get into the defense. That is what is coming up. All right. Welcome back into this inaugural Who's On podcast episode. Again, I've got Greg Medea and Jackie Franchulli joining me here. And now we're going to take a little deep dive into the offense. And in any talk around the offense, you got to start with the quarterback decision. That came at the sweet spot, that 11 a.m. on a Saturday morning. Everyone's at their computers. They're ready for the news. Everyone's ready to get that information out there. We all had our stories ready. I would rank that behind a Friday news dump. But guys, Anthony Calandra, the quarterback, you know, I think anyone that says they knew what the decision was going to be all along, I don't really buy into it, because I think this was a really close battle throughout, and I think both guys had some positives in their way. Either way, it's 2 good quarterbacks. It's a good quarterback situation for Virginia to have. But just reactions to Calandra being named the starter, Greg, we can start with you.
Yeah, I think in the spring, I wouldn't have been surprised, because at that time, a lot of people around the program were saying it was kind of his job to lose. He was in a good circumstance. He was coming off a good season in which he performed as a freshman with, you know, 2-time ACC rookie of the week, great passing performances against James Madison, Louisville, and Duke. I really had some steady games. So you thought there was some momentum that way. And then it seemed like maybe spring, Tony Musk had a good spring game and he carried some momentum into the summer, that it was going to be more even and going to be down to the wire. And then you thought, well, if it's that close, you probably go with the veteran, right? Yeah. So logic, you know, it flipped, and that's a credit to both Anthony and Tony, that it was that close all the way down to the wire with the 2 quarterbacks. But I think for Calandra, he gives them a little bit added dynamic in the run game, Preston. I think that's the key. You add an extra element the defense has to prepare for. Calandra gives you that, and as long as he's cut down on the turnovers, which by all accounts, according to Des Kitchings, Tony Elliott, that was going to be a key factor in the decision, was who turned the ball over less, who protected the football better. It must have happened, right? It must have happened throughout August training camp. And I know we'll get to hear Tony Elliott speak this week, but to me, that's a good thing if that's the case.
Jackie, your thoughts when you saw that email pop up? I know you're playing with the kids. You're having a nice Saturday morning, getting ready for the first football game of the year. What was your reaction to seeing Calandria come in as a starter?
Well, I was currently convincing my 7-year-old to take a passport photo while that press release came down. So it was great timing. But no, you know, I was kind of agree with Greg. You know, it wasn't surprising if you see the trend in the spring, but then you look at how close to competition it was. So it could have gone either way in that regard. There was more buzz around Tony Musket, especially after the, you know, AC kickoff with Tony Musket being the representative there. But the future of Virginia's offense, everyone kind of knew it was going to be Anthony Calandria. The only thing we didn't know is if that future was now. But even if you talk to like the transfers that came in, they always mentioned Anthony Calandria. And even the players, you know, during the offseason and all that stuff, they mentioned practicing with Anthony Calandria. So it wasn't surprising in that respect because, you know, they have been playing up that this is the future of Virginia. And when you look at fall camp, if both of them are kind of even, if let's say both of them weren't turning over the ball, I think they had an issue during the first scrimmage when Des Kitchings said that they were the offense, didn't have the best day against the defense. Defense were the upper hand, but a lot of those things got cleaned up before the second practice, a second scrimmage. So like what Greg is saying, if they're even and it's a 50-50 shot, then you got to see what has that little extra X factor. And with Anthony Calandria, you have that X factor with his legs, like Greg said, but also the intangibles where he's grown so much as a leader off season as well. For such a young guy going into his second year, he seems to really have gained the respect of that locker room. And sometimes it is about those intangibles when you are the quarterback.
Yeah, and just some numbers to back up kind of what y'all are saying with Calandria and just kind of the X factor that he has. Last year, you know, Cavaliers averaged about 40 yards more passing yards per game with Calandria in his 6 starts. So not including the Georgia Tech game where he was quickly into the game, but his 6 starts last year, 40 more passing yards, about 20-ish more total offensive yards, and a tick more in scoring. Pretty even there though. But of course, you know, you could just see that the offense just had a little bit more flair when he was in there. It had a little bit more explosion when he was in there last season. And I think the offseason was big for him, just being able to show that he can, you know, take some of those fresh mistakes, cut those out of his game. You know, we talk about the interceptions against Maryland or the interceptions against NC State that kind of cost the Cavaliers, you know, late in those games. If he can kind of take some of those out of his game, I think he was in a much better spot to come into this season just with everything else that he adds, you know, his legs and just kind of that overall X factor for him. But all right, getting into predictions now for the Cavalier offense, we're going to look at passing yards leader first. I think this one might be, you know, just based off who the starter is now. Although last year, Musket was your day one starter and Calandria still ended up leading the Cavaliers in passing. But guys, is it a pretty much consensus Calandria, Greg?
Yeah, I don't feel the need to spend too much time on this one. I think it's going to be Calandria.
Yeah, it's going to be Calandria.
Yeah, all right. Unanimous Calandria. So let's get into it. Rushing yards leader. Obviously, Kobe Pace comes into this season as kind of the clear number one back after last season when he had, you know, kind of a by committee with Paris Jones and Mike Hollins in there as well. They do want to have more guys back there that can run the ball. So guys like Xavier Brown, Jack Greasy, Noah Vaughn, if he gets healthy. But right now, are we all feeling Pace? That's kind of where I'm thinking, Jackie.
Yeah, I feel like it's going to be Kobe Pace. He's going to be their workhorse this year. Like, yeah, you're going to see Jack Greasy and Xavier Brown. I think Xavier Brown is also going to be someone that they use in the slot too. So I think you will see them and possibly even Noah Vaughn. But at the end of the day, I think Kobe Pace will be the rushing leader.
Yeah, as long as he's healthy, Preston, right? And that's the key. You got to keep him healthy because it's a lot of inexperience back there. To me, I think as long as he's healthy, he's the top guy.
Yeah, all right. So pretty much unanimous there. And that's kind of what the Cavaliers are hoping and envisioning. And, you know, they've talked a little bit about maybe last year with so many backs back there that he wasn't able to get a kind of a rhythm, and hopefully he can find that this year. Maybe the offensive line can open up some holes for him to be able to find that. All right, looking at the receiving yards leader for this year, kind of could be a lot of different names. I know Malachi Fields is the guy that's coming back. He had 811 receiving yards last year as kind of the number two guy behind Malik Washington. There is no Malik Washington in this offense this year, so it'll be a little bit more balanced. I would still lean Malachi Fields as my receiving yards leader, but I think there's a lot of different guys you could look at. Jackie, what do you think?
I think Trell Harris is going to be one to watch. I think Malachi Fields will be up there, and you certainly can be at the end of the year, but I'm going to go with one of the guys that are underrated and I don't think talked about enough, and that's Trell Harris. I think he was one of the guys that came quietly onto Virginia's rosters during that period in December during the portal time. I think a lot of people were focused so much on Chris Tyree and also Andre Green Jr. because they were from the 804. So obviously it's exciting to have those in-state guys back to Virginia. But Trell Harris, he's really good and he's flashed a lot during fall camp. He's made a lot of big plays during those close scrimmages from sources I talked to, and they're excited about him. So I can, you know, I think he will be one of those guys that really will help Virginia offensively.
I think it'll be Fields. Harris certainly made a name for himself during training camp. That's certainly clear. Heck, I wrote a big feature on it. But I think it'll be Malachi Fields. I just think, you know, over 800 yards last year, 5 touchdowns as the number two guy, right? As the number two option in the offense. I think he's poised for a pretty impressive year. And I think Virginia needs him to have an impressive year at wide receiver after losing Malik Washington. I think the ball will be spread around a little bit more, but Fields will be the top target. Big, physical, 6'4". They want him to play a little meaner, want him to play a little nastier. If they can get that out of him, that's good for Anthony Calandri to have a big, tall target like that.
And I'll go even a step further. I feel pretty confident in kind of the strides that he's made. Remember, this is a guy never played receiver before he got to Virginia. Then he's been injured. So he's kind of been picking up the game as he's gone along. And I think last year, being able to watch Malik Washington and pick up some on those nuances really helped him. So I'm predicting at least second team all ACC at the end of this season. I have a big expectation for Fields this year, especially now that we know Calandria is the starter and kind of what that does with some of the receiving numbers. I like that a lot. All right, offensive MVP here. So you can go a lot of different directions here. Jackie, we'll start off with you. Who do you have for offensive MVP?
Brian Stevens. I think if you look at last year, Brian Stevens' move to center is what started to change things for Virginia. His first game was against Maryland at that position. And, you know, that was the first time he played that position since high school. I mean, he only played, his dad said, one game in high school at center, and he had to learn the position with Terry Heffernan, and he changed everything for UVA. So if he's healthy and he's going to be their starting center, then he's going to be the reason, one of the reasons why this team is going to have some success, because if he's confident with Anthony Calandria back there, then Anthony Calandria will be able to throw the ball and have time, and also going to be established in a run game. And with Brian Stevens there, he's also got a veteran voice and is able to line guys up properly. And plus, you have that cohesiveness for the first time in that O-line for Virginia in three years since you have, like, actually, you know what the starting lineup is going to look like out there on the first day for that O-line. So I think Brian Stevens is the offensive MVP.
It was probably the biggest addition of the offseason, just having him come back and anchor that offensive line for another year. Greg, where are you going for offensive MVP?
Calandria. If this team's going to succeed, they got to get good quarterback play. I'll go with Calandria. Won a starting job. Maybe he just rides the momentum through this season. If they're going to get to 6 wins, they're going to have good quarterback play. I'll go with Calandria.
Yeah, I'm going to keep it simple too. Just go with Anthony Calandria. I think just what we talked about earlier with the X factor that he brings to this offense and just kind of the big plays that he can make. If he can keep the turnovers down, but still keep some of those big plays in there, I think he could really lead this offense to a big year. All right, under the radar player, someone that you've heard a lot about throughout camp and someone that maybe, you know, the rest of the world outside of us media who talk about everyone from, you know, number one to number 101. Who's an under the radar guy you're looking at, Greg?
I'll go with Jackie's pick with the receiver stuff. It's Trell Harris, under-recruited. She mentioned it. Flew under the radar because Andre Green and Chris Tyree were coming in at the same time. But you got to remember, not many scholarship offers out of high school either for Trell Harris, and a native of Chicago, of the Chicago area. Kent State and Northern Illinois were the only FBS schools to offer him. So he's used to flying under the radar, but he kind of chipped away there, had a good couple of seasons, and played well against top competition. Like, if you go back and look at his stats against their Power 5 games the last year, Arkansas and Central Florida particularly, Trell Harris performed in those games. So I think he'll be able to make the step up. He said, you know, he told me that's kind of what gave him confidence, that showed that he could play at this level, that he felt like he was skilled enough to play at this level. Virginia got in, saw his film, and went after him hard. And I think they're very happy with what they've gotten to this point. Now we'll see if it can translate to Saturdays.
And another big part of that is J.R. Wilson probably going to miss the first couple of games. And so obviously Harris kind of slots in as maybe that number two guy behind Fields. And then with the slot play with Tyree and other ones, I'm going to go under the radar here just with this tight end position, and specifically Tyler Neville coming from Harvard. We haven't seen this tight end position really do much of anything in this offense yet. And so that's kind of one of the big mysteries going into this year. All right, now that you got some bodies, guys like Neville, you got Sackett Wood back, you've got Say Jennis coming in from Clemson. You know, how does this impact the rest of the team? You know, maybe they can get some dump offs. I mean, last year, just being a guy that watches a lot of NFL football, you know, looking at the Detroit Lions when they got Sam Laporta, a guy out of Iowa, just being able to have someone to dump the ball down to just made a world of difference for their offense. And I think maybe, you know, these guys don't need to put up all ACC numbers, but just get a couple yards here and there, be a guy that can be open out there and reliably catch the ball. I think that's something that you have
a red zone threat too, right?
A red zone threat as well. Yeah. That's something that we haven't seen since the likes of Jelani Woods and Tony Poljan were towering over ACC defenders. And so just someone that can be reliable out there over the middle, get some catches. I think that'll be huge. So I'm going to highlight Neville there, but kind of the whole position. Jackie, who do you have?
Can I use Trell Harris again?
You can use Trell Harris again. You picked him as your receiving leader, so that's a good pick.
So I do think it's Trell Harris. I've mentioned all my reasons. I think he was such a good win for Adam Mims. Kudos to them to, you know, see that talent and recruit him and kind of seal the deal. And he picked them over for other Big Ten competition. So I think he's going to be the one that is going to shock a little bit some of the national pundits who are mentioning a lot of the other receivers, but not.
All right, now transitioning to the defensive side of the ball. We're going to go straight in predictions here. How about your tackle leader? Last year, I'll say the tackle leader was Jonas Sanker overall. Are we thinking it's going to be the safety again, or do we maybe go a little further up the field to find our tackle leader, Jackie?
Well, you're hoping it's not a safety if your defense is stopping explosive plays and handling the run game. So I believe, you know, Cam Robinson were probably who should be the leading tackler, at least him or James Jackson. I'm interested to see what Corey Thomas's role is going to be, because you can argue, you know, if he goes closer to the box, if there's some issues with the linebacker depth for injuries or whatnot, with, you know, Stevie Bracy hurt. But yeah, if for Virginia to have a successful season, it has to be either Cam Jackson or Cam Robinson or James Jackson. So I would say Cam is probably going to be the most likely if that were to happen.
Yeah, I'll go with Cam Robinson too. I'm with Jackie there. He's excellent as a freshman. I think their third leading tackler as a freshman. He's going to be even better as a sophomore. And with what the new linebackers coach Mike Adams is preaching and how he's taught them seriously to understand run fits, it's been a huge emphasis since he arrived in the spring for all those linebackers, but particularly for Cam. I think he's going to have a big year.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Cam Robinson, making a clean sweep here. Just he had 71 tackles last year, and he didn't start the first couple games of the season. So he was coming on and getting more playing time as the season progressed. I think he had three double-digit tackle games. So really good returns as a freshman. I think he's probably going to get this one. All right, sack leader. Last year, your sack leader was Cam Butler. Cam Butler only played a few games at the beginning of the season, played four games, led Virginia with 3.5 sacks. Now that we have hopefully a healthy Cam Butler, are we still sticking with Cam Butler as the sack leader, or are you going somewhere else, Greg?
I'm going to go Chico Bennett. I think Butler and Bennett are both going to have big years, but remember, Chico played through serious injury too last year. Never really got healthy. He was dealing with the shoulder after the shoulder surgery from the year before. Had the other injury in training camp with the knee, I believe it was. where he had to miss the Tennessee game, got back, and then progressively worked in. So I think it's going to be Chico Bennett. They're going to need him. They were last in the FBS in sacks a season ago, tied for last in the FBS for total sacks. They're going to need Chico Bennett to be back to his 2022 form when he was getting after the passer week in and week out.
I'm going to stick with Chico as well, Jackie, and that's I love Cam Butler, but I think he's might open up some stuff for Chico on the other side, just because teams are going to be like, you know, a couple games in, like, oh gosh, this Butler guy is beating us off the line every time. So let's shift a little bit more protection his way. Maybe Chico benefits from that on the backside. I like maybe 8.5 sacks for Bennett this year, and maybe like 7.5, 8 sacks for Butler. So like barely beats him. But I think just in that ballpark, that's probably what I'm looking at. So I'm going Chico Bennett here, Jackie.
I'm going with Cam Butler, just because he was playing some of his best college football before his injury, and he is healthy. He's also got a chip on his shoulder. He's been the one that's most vocal about saying, I don't want to leave my legacy of only winning those 6 games here. He doesn't want to lose anymore. And he's made it kind of his personal mission to kind of lead this team with him and some of the other veterans like Brian Stevens, some of the older guys there. And I feel like he has these intangibles that helps this defense move and helps them lead. So I know the argument is that, you know, people are going to target Cam Butler, so they're going to open up for Chico. But talking to other college coaches, even during Cam Butler's first season at Virginia, they already knew that Cam Butler was one of their best defenders on Virginia's roster. I mean, he was one that was talked about from other college coaches. So I don't think the plan will change because everyone already knew that Cam Butler was one of the best defenders.
All right, interceptions leader. I don't know how many people would have guessed who UVA's interception leader last year. They didn't have a ton, but it was actually Cam Robinson with 2 interceptions. So yeah, you hope that you have a guy with maybe more than 2 interceptions this year as your leader. I'm going to pick actually Jonas Anker. You know, we talked about him as the tackle leader last year earlier, but he had 11 pass deflections. So if you just get 2 hands on the ball, you know, being someone that covered him when he was playing high school football, I saw that guy catch a lot of footballs. So I wouldn't be surprised. I know he only has 1 career interception, but I'm going to pick him at least get like 3 or 4 this year. I think he's going to have a bigger impact on the back end this year as opposed to up front and tackling.
I'll go with the total wild card. I'm going to go with Jam Jackson, the former Robert Morris standout. I think he's had a nice training camp. I think Kempton Shine's a clear-cut starter. The other position, it seems like it'll be a mix of Jam and Dre Walker. I think Jam Jackson kind of fits what John Rodzinski wants at that corner position, tall, long, athletic. I think you're going to see him make a few plays.
Yeah, for me, I like the Jam Jackson pick, but I also think Jonas Sanker had his hand on the ball a lot last year. So I feel like him or even Antonio Clary, 2 guys that are known for picking the ball, but I think they both have the ball hawk mentality. I'll lean towards Jonas Sanker because when you look at tape last year, if he just had another hand on some of those balls instead of just kind of batting it away, I feel like he would have got those picks. So although I really like Jam Jackson as one of the underrated guys on defense, I'm going to pick Jonas Anger.
Yeah, I think just, you know, he had 11 pass deflections. He's got to get at least 2 hands on a couple of those this year. All right, defensive MVP. I think you can go a lot of different ways here. Jackie, we'll go back to you for that one.
I'm going to go with Cam Butler. I kind of mentioned it a little bit when I chose him for sacks leader. He's a good player and he's going to pressure the quarterback, but what he brings in the locker room, you can't quantify. He's a big veteran voice, a very big leader. I mean, last year when he wasn't playing, he was coaching guys up. I've heard stories of him going to the film room with different guys. Him and Antonio Clary kind of watched film together. Cam Butler mentioned that he learned a little bit about what the secondary does, which has helped him understand the defense more. So that's the type of player he is. So you can't, you know, when you're factoring stats, those intangibles aren't in there. So that's why I think Cam Butler is the MVP because they missed that vocal leader last year.
Are you going a similar direction, Greg, or are you changing it up?
No, similar direction to Jackie here. Butler's kind of the alpha male of that team, right? I think that's what's clear. He's the guy everybody looks to. He's seventh year in college football. And it's not just sacks, right? It's disruption of the quarterback. It's playing against the run. And he was pretty good against the run last season. There'll be some tackles for loss in there. It's Butler.
I'm going to go with the other Cam here, Cam Robinson. I think he's in for a big sophomore season. I just think that, you know, the production he can have as a tackler, I think he can also, you know, be used as a blitzer. You know, he had two interceptions last year, had a pick six as well. So I think he's in for a big year. He's just a special level athlete that I think is going to make a huge impact in the middle of this defense, especially because it looks like, you know, he could be one of the guys making calls out there. And so that's going to be huge for him as a sophomore. Now that you got those green dots that direct the helmet communication. All right. Under the radar guy, I'll go first. There's a lot of guys for this spot, I feel like, on the defensive side more than the offensive side, because we talk so much more about the offensive side. But one of the guys I think is Kempton Shine. And I know he's probably the odds on guy to be one of the starters at corner right now. But I think out of all the transfers that Virginia got this offseason, not a lot of people are talking about Kempton Shine. I came away probably most impressed with him out of the spring game back in the spring. And it seems like he's carried that on as we've gotten into fall camp now. So I think he's going to be definitely one of the guys at corner and have a big impact, as maybe, you know, yeah, we looked at this Virginia defense. What have they been missing since John Rodzinski's first year? Well, it was kind of impact shutdown guys like Anthony Johnson and Fentrell Cypress. He could be kind of like a Fentrell Cypress type, I feel like, a guy that can get his hand on the ball, get some pass deflections. And so a big spot for this defense. All right, so Jackie, who is your under-the-radar player on the defensive side of the football for the Cavaliers?
I'm going to follow Greg Medea's earlier pick with Jam Jackson. I think he's one of the underrated guys. Obviously, that cornerback position is in a big position battle. I think Kempton Shine has secured his starting role, but then on the opposite side, I think it's going to be between Dre Walker and Jam Jackson, and I think Jam Jackson has done enough to be in that conversation. Not many people are talking about him because Kempton Shine has kind of took that other starting role. Meanwhile, when you look at Dre Walker, he's a guy who's experienced last year. He came back. So he's the automatic guy that people talk about in that CB room. So I'm going to pick Jam Jackson.
All right, going to Greg. Greg, staying on the defensive side of the football, who do you got?
I got, there's a couple of options here, but it's got to be Corey Thomas, right? I mean, just in terms of the versatility, like in spring, Tony Elliott compared him to what Isaiah Simmons and what Isaiah Simmons could do at Clemson. That's a lofty comparison in terms of talent. But when you think about the type of athlete he is, it's something that's a player, you know, John Rodzinski frankly hasn't had to work with since he got to UVA. It seems like they've been looking for that rangy player who could line up against a slot on third down, who could rush the passer on occasion, who could play in the defensive backfield, who could maybe step in and play some weak side linebacker for them if they need to. So I think for me, it's Corey Thomas, and there's just intrigue there because you don't know exactly what the role is going to look like until the ball is kicked off on Saturday.
I'm glad you mentioned Corey Thomas because he is probably my favorite player on this whole defense. I love the versatility that he brings. He just was borderline on that, maybe on the radar of fans at this point, just because of how gushingly, you know, Rodzinski and Elliott talked about him in the spring, and, you know, kind of didn't talk about him as much in the fall just because, you know, he was here in the spring. But I do love Corey Thomas, and I'm really interested to see what he does out there. Another guy I'm just going to throw out there, this is kind of like a bonus pick, but he's been here for a long time. Everyone knows him. It's Antonio Clary. Like, I think people are just taking for granted, you know, having him back in that secondary. They missed him a lot last year as that safety. And I think just having him back, Jackie, I know you're a big fan of Clary, but just having him back, I think is going to be a big thing for this defense. Looking now at special teams, it was a weak point for UVA last year, and that might be an understatement. But looking, you know, they got their specialists back, Will Bettridge, Daniel Sparks, but they bring in some stuff in the return game. Just one thing to watch for, I guess, from both of you on this special teams. Greg, we'll start with you.
It's Chris Tyree. I mean, my goodness, if he can provide Virginia just a fraction of what he provided Notre Dame and what he did with the Irish, right? One of four players in program history to return a kick, return a punt, rush for a touchdown, and catch for a touchdown. One of four players in history to score those four ways. If he can be dynamic in the return game, and that's the hope, right? They think they can really change how they're perceived in special teams. They were abysmal last year. I mean, there's just no other way to say it.
Yeah.
It was a problem. I mean, and they were not a threat in a punt game. The biggest concern in the punt game was whether or not somebody would catch the ball. I mean, so now you have an experienced returner back there who not only can catch it, but can go. And the hope is for Virginia's from Virginia coaches, from their players, is that Chris Tyree changes the equation for them on special teams. And what a boost that would be to the team if they can go from their special teams being a liability for it to being a game-changing positive.
Yeah, Jackie, where are you looking at with the special teams unit that was one of the worst in the country last season?
I mean, and there's only one way to look at. They only have one way to go is up, right?
You would think.
They were 12. The Cavaliers punt team was ranked 12th in the ACC and 13th in kickoff. And there was only one team in the country that gave up two punt blocks for a touchdown last year. And when
and
you
that
look
was
at
in
it,
a 14 team ACC, not the 17 team ACC.
Yes, this is a 14 team ACC. And I mean, special teams cost them two close games, JMU and Louisville. I mean, and you can argue that there was other mishaps on special teams and against Maryland, for instance, because of momentum switch because of a special teams play. So I think the addition of Chris Tyree is huge. But I also would add the addition of depth to several positions also is huge for Virginia because they just lacked the depth last year because everyone was hurt. And also you want quality depth, right? You don't want to overuse your starters. You want guys committed to special teams and you want guys who understand what their role is and not get confused when you're trying to put your punt team out there and you have a guy who's not in that position going out there. So I think all that is better for Virginia this year. It's just, again, it's performing it on game day, those mental errors, those lack of focus, you just want to see how that translates in game day.
Yeah, and it's not even the specialist because I feel pretty comfortable about the guys at kicker, punter, you know, Will Bettridge. It looks like he might be adding some distance on his kicking. If just reading one article from Jeff White at VirginiaSports.com, his improvement there. We saw in that first game between Georgia Tech and Florida State how huge the kicking game was. I mean, the Florida State kicker was booting that thing from almost 60 yards. So that's key. And Daniel Sparks obviously had some better success in his first year at Virginia. Maybe he can kind of get back onto it. But I think it's so much more about the Dexter depth, the guys that are playing those roles on the kick team and on the kick return team and punt return and all those teams. You know, can they play their roles to a good level? All right. We're going to wrap it up there. That is your season prediction for the Who's On podcast. Guys, Richmond is almost here Saturday night at Sky Stadium. Just one thing real quick that you're looking forward to about the new season playing Richmond. Just one thing you want to see, whether it's, you know, just the game day experience or just actually on the field.
For me, I think it's simple. You want to see this Virginia team show up with a take care of business mentality, right? You don't need a game that's close against an FCS opponent. All due respect to Richmond, right? They've been in the FCS playoffs last year. They're a good FCS program. Russ Huseman, a coach there, does a really good job. But this Virginia team is more talented. They've got more speed. They've got more athleticism. They're bigger. They're stronger. They return more players, right, than what'll be on the other side. So to me, I think you want to see a, you know, step on the neck type of game where you're pedal to the metal the whole way through, and what a, you know, power four team should look like against an FCS school.
Yeah, I think for the bigger picture, I agree with Greg. You want to see progress. I think progress is going to be important for Virginia head coach Tony Elliott going into year three. You have to show that. For you to build that momentum with the fan base, you need to show progress on the field. And the first step of that is to win in a convincing fashion against Richmond. On a more smaller scale, I'm interested to see how that tight end room works within that offense, kind of to your point earlier, Preston. You know, I'm excited to see how they use Tyler Neville. I'm excited to see how they use Say Jennis and also have a return of Sackett Wood and bring that experience in their tight end room. That's the part that I'm excited to see, because technically the way the offense is built under Des Kitchings and Tony Elliott, position is really important. Haven't had the tight end that they would want for that offense, and now they have multiple options. So that's what I'm more.
Yeah, and Jackie, I think, you know, kind of making a statement, you know, don't make this a close game. You're facing Richmond. It's an FCS opponent. Take care of business. That's important. But also, I just want to see what Scott Stadium looks like. You know, we got the big new scoreboard out there. You know, we've been dealing with the other one for years now, and the audio system and everything. Just to kind of see that debut, I think that's going to be fun. And, you know, obviously it looks like they've tried to make a lot of improvements to the game day experience. I think I'm going to have to talk about that next week, just kind of breaking down what that first game day experience looks like when they've taken this offseason to kind of make some of those improvements. But that is all the time we have for this inaugural episode of the Who's On podcast. I want to thank my guests, Greg Padilla from the Daily Progress and Jackie Franchulli from 247 Sports for coming on for this maiden voyage here. Again, check out their work. You can find them on social media and as well on their websites, the Daily Progress and 247 Sports. As well, you can look at thesaber.com. We've got all our stuff leading up to game one against Richmond. But for now, that's it for the Who's On podcast. We'll catch you next week.